The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. Coming up, international Bible teacher and author Beth Moore describes what a life of faithlessness looks like.
And so here's what happens. When I try to attempt this walk with God with no faith, what happens is I have to fill up that huge vacuum with all sorts of good works.
Discovering how to live a life of faith, next on Life Today.
Welcome to Life Today, and welcome to this special Wednesday with Beth Moore. I'm Betty Robinson, and this is James.
I want you to get the Awaken Now Conference. As a matter of fact, Beth's message, what she taught here, was one of the most dynamic heart cries I've ever heard come from a believer. And all the other speakers, from our pastor Robert Morris to Sammy Rodriguez to Dr. Ben Carson, the noted neurosurgeon who has shaken the country with his wonderful wisdom from God, Governor Huckabee, Mark Rutland, so many others that you'll recognize, like Christine Kane, Lisa Bevere, and Betty and I shared. God use you mightily, Betty. Get these CDs, DVDs, and the transcript. We'll tell you a little later how you can get them. Here's Beth Moore teaching a very important message on the widow's oil.
Watch what happens here. Verse 8, I'm going to read, I think that I'm going to go 11 to 17. Oh, I don't think I can. I got to go to 8. Okay, verse 8. One day Elisha went on to Shunem, where a wealthy woman lived, who urged him to eat some food, so whenever he passed that way, he would turn in there to eat food. I've never noticed a man having to be urged the second or third time. So, you know, he knew he was going to get a good meal, nine. So she said to her husband, "Behold, now I know that this is a holy man of God who is continually passing our way. Let us make a small room on the roof with walls and put there for him a bed, a table, a chair, and a lamp, so that whenever he comes to us, he can go in there." And I love it. Just the basic necessities, they just make him this little area that he can call a home away from home. Verse 11, "One day he came there and he turned into the chamber and he rested there. And he said to Gehazi, his servant, 'Call this Shunammite.' And when he called her, she stood before him. And he said to him, 'Say now to her, see, you have taken all this trouble for us. What is to be done for you? Would you have a word spoken on your behalf to the king or to the commander of the army?'" Pause there just a second. So he goes to, this is the Shunammite, wealthy, wealthy woman. He goes and he stays in his little chamber. They've gone to all this trouble to build it for him. He's laying there and he's just like, I mean, like, who does this? So he just gets his servant, "Go call her." Now, I love this. I love watching what's happening in ancient manners here, because he does not talk straight to her. Look what happens here. In verse 13, he said to him, so Elisha is saying to Gehazi, "Say now to her, see," and she's standing there right in front of him. "See, you have taken," so he's saying it to her, "you have taken all this trouble." So now Gehazi's going, "You have taken all this trouble." Are you getting, because this is beautiful. I love stuff like this. I just love stuff like this. So she doesn't hear it just once. She hears it twice. And so is there anything, can I speak to the king, the commander of the army? And she answers something very in the verse 13. She answers, "I dwell among my own people." And what she means by that would just be like, I'm doing fine. No need. So that's a very ancient terminology, so we don't get it. But she just means, listen, what could I want? I got my people. Many of you were like that. I got my people. I mean, when I've got Keith and the girls and my in-laws who are my parents live just down from us, and when my grandkids are there, I mean, I just like, I got my people. This is all I need. I got my people. And so she says that back, and he looks at Gehazi in verse 14, and he said, "Well, what then is to be done for?" And Gehazi answered, "Well, she has no son, and her husband's old." I mean, just like, okay. Sorry, gentlemen. I mean, awkward. Verse 15, And he said, call her. And when he called her, she stood at the doorway again. And he said, this time, he says it straight to her, verse 16. He said, at this season, about this time next year, you shall embrace a son. And she said, no, my Lord. Oh, man of God, do not lie to your servant. Now, I know that some of us would be saying, no, my Lord, for different reasons. Like, but hers was, don't mess with me on this again. This is like, don't even. I've had that lie said to me, do not lie to your servant. And verse 17 says, but the woman conceived and she bore a son about that time, the following spring, as Elisha had said to her. Such a crazy story. But the point I'm making to you, and if you're just getting into the text with us and just coming in to the classroom with us, what I'm wanting you to see is that this story of this wealthy Shunammite is right next to the story of the woman who only has one little jar of oil in her entire house. So there's something to this. To me, here are these bookends here. And so I see, like, this is woman A, and then this is woman Z. And for our gentleman to really come into the passage with us, this is like a picture of man A, and then there is man Z, because you got everything from A to Z somewhere in between the two. I want you to picture this, if you would, please, because you got woman or man A representing someone with almost nothing. Almost nothing. No one watching or tuning in has nothing. It would be impossible. The fact that you're either in front of a computer or you're in front of a television screen, the fact that you could be here, we are not people with absolutely nothing. So as bad as it could get, and for our audience and for all of you in Bible study with us today, is it would just be like, I have almost nothing. Then the other extreme is almost everything. I mean, girl Z, she had almost everything. So this is, relate to it, gentlemen. You got a man with almost nothing, and you got a man with almost everything. Now, nobody has everything if they don't have Jesus. Nobody has everything and is still really living on this very difficult, fallen globe. So I just want you to get this picture, because somewhere between, we all fall in between them. And I wonder, could you just gauge, if you had that a meter going, and I'm picturing it like the gas tank in my car, I mean, are you just like almost empty or almost full? Because right here, here's what we've got. Like, one doesn't have a dime. The other one is wealthy. One can't pay her bills. The other one could probably pay all of her neighbor's bills. One has had something taken from her husband, and the other just had something missing. Is anybody just getting this put together? One's got almost nothing. The other one thinks she needs nothing. And both of them were about to experience a mighty miracle of God. I don't know which way you lean there. I don't know if you're leaning toward the almost everything or the almost nothing, but here's the most beautiful thing I have to tell you today. You have not already received everything you're getting from God. And again, I want to say to you, I'm not talking about physical, tangible prosperity. I'm talking about something a whole lot better than that. I'm talking about God showing up in your life in such a way that you know that you know. You don't just believe in the Son of God. You flat out know Him. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Both of them were about to get a miracle. I think this is so intriguing when you contrast the two women together, because I just wonder, have any of us gotten to the place where we just have quit asking? Because that's what had happened to her. Like, don't even bring that back up to me. I don't, that subject is not even up for discussion. I thought when our hope gets deferred, what a crisis we can find ourselves in. And if we work through that crisis, we can numb ourselves and dumb our faith down enough to go, you know what, here's what I'm going to do. I am going to ask little and risk little. Mm-hmm. And so this is how we're going to do it. I'm going to live in such a way that God cannot disappoint me. I wonder who is in this lesson today? anybody, where I'm just, I'll tell you what's going to happen now. We're going to get in the safe zone here, and then God and I can just be comfortable together. And so it's so so tempting to attempt faithfulness without any faith. What I'm praying is going to happen for every single one of us through this series is that we will get the fire back in our faith. Because here's what happens. I just want you to see as if I'm writing it in fluorescent letters right above my head. I just want you to hear that word and see that word, faithfulness. Because for many of us, one of the verses that we know the best out of the Gospels that we want to hear when we see God face to face is, well done, my good and faithful servant. But here's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get our faith out of our faithfulness, and all we've got left is just fullness. And so here's what happens. When I try to attempt this walk with God with no faith, what happens is I have to fill up that huge vacuum with all sorts of good works. Now, I think you know that James and Betty and that we are adamant about living out our faith. That's not even in question here. What I'm saying is some of us are exercising no faith whatsoever. We're just going to work ourselves half to death to make up for the vacuum that our faithlessness has left. The Word of God says in Hebrews 11:6, I didn't make it up. A lot of times I'm not even glad it's there, but it is there. It says without faith, it is impossible to please God. That we're justified by faith, and the just shall live by faith, we're told in the Scriptures. So this thing is we're going to get this where we're going to go to church, we're going to give money, we're going to work hard. We're going to help in the nursery at church. But I'm telling you, I'm not getting back out there in the risk zone of faith. And here we are called again back to that place. I want to tell you something. It's not just the pleasure of God we're risking with our faithlessness. Let me tell you, faithless people become unforgiving people. And you can take that one to the spiritual bank. If we are going to lapse into our faithlessness and we're just going to do the thing, we're going to work hard, but we're not really going to exercise our faith, what will happen is it will not be long before we find ourselves in unforgiveness because forgiveness takes faith. Some of the people you're forgiving are not sorry. Amen?
Amen.
So here you are. I ask you, give me something, just throw something out there that would be a bigger faith than forgiveness. Because what you're saying is, I'm going to believe God to make it right. Because in your mind, if you're like me, I come from a background of childhood abuse. It's not all right with me. I haven't gotten to the place where I think, well, it's okay now. No. No, it's not. You know what gives me peace? God has promised He's going to handle it. I don't have to. I got to give it up because He said, you know what? I'm going to tell you something. You can hand that to me because I'm going to handle that. I don't have to. It's an act of faith. Faithless people become cold-hearted people because girlfriend and guy friend, you love by faith. I've been married 34 years. You don't just enter into a long-term marriage that still has some life in it. I'm not talking about coexisting, but to actually have life in your marriage, you don't go all of those years without faith. You just don't. Faithlessness causes every kind of ripple effect you can possibly imagine. Now, I want you to go back and look at verses 2-7 with me, 2 Kings. So we're going to return now. We've made a comparison between one woman who has almost nothing and one woman who has almost everything and how both of them were about to get a miracle. And we're going to look back now at the woman that just has the one little bit of oil. Let me back up to where it says in verse 2, Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me. What have you in the house?" And she said, "Your servant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." And verse 3, then he said, "Go outside, borrow vessels from all your neighbors, empty vessels and not too few. That may be the best phrase in the whole thing. Everybody say, not too few.
Not too few.
Oh, say it again. Not too few. I mean, I want you to see something like come out of your mouth, like spit on the person's hair in front of you. Not too few. One more time. Not too few. And then it says, and go in, shut the door behind yourself and your sons, and pour into all these vessels. And when one is full, set it aside. Verse 5, so she went in from him and shut the door behind herself and her sons, and she poured, and as she poured, they brought the vessels to her. And when the vessels were full, she said to her son, bring me another vessel. And he said to her, there is not another. Then the oil stopped flowing. Verse 7, she came and told the man of God, and he said, go, sell the oil and pay your debts, and you and your sons can live on the rest. I'm going to tell you what I think God is up to in our present series. He has come to awaken the jar gatherer in all of us. Wouldn't that be something? A call back to faith that this is not just about works. This is about us not just having believed in God, but believing Him. Getting in to a lifestyle that only He can explain. The kind, do you remember in the book of Acts when they said they were just astonished at the power of these men, Peter and John, because they were ordinary men. And yet they were shown extraordinary power. Only Jesus could explain that. Okay, so I love that he says to her, he asks her, okay, so what shall I do for you? And something must happen. I'm hoping one day when we all, when time is complete and we all are in heaven and we all get to see the finished product, that we're going to get to see some of the visual, like they'll show it to us like on a DVD. Because there's so much that you can't see. There are things happening, expressions happening here. And so we're looking at the page, the ink on the page, but we don't know what's happening in between. There's some reason why he asks her a question and then he asks her another question. He changes it. He says, what shall I do for you? And then he says, well, tell me this, what do you have in your house? So I don't know whether she just like, he was like, you know what, I'm going to ask you a second question. This is going to lead you a little better. What do you have in your house? And she said, well, I have nothing in my house but a jar of oil. And he tells her what to do. There are times, wisdom knows that there are some things you do not do for another person, or you cheat them of their own intense encounter with God. I mean, he could have just gone and done it. You know, I'll go get you some money. I mean, if it's so, what tradition says, and this was a man that did work for him, and that much is intimated there in verse 1 of 2 Kings 4. He could have just gone, like, I can get you some provision. There was something in it for her that she was going to have to get up and act on the faith. And I think it was critical to the matter. She was to go out and borrow jars to awaken that jar gatherer in every single one of us. She did not lay in the bed. She got up and borrowed jars.
To obtain information on Beth's teaching materials and for her speaking schedule, visit us online at lifetoday.org.
Well, I really love the point you made about everybody gathering, doing something. It is so heartbreaking to me to see people wait for somebody to come to them rather than taking action themselves. I've said many times of the birds. You know, Jesus said, consider the birds, that they don't worry, but boy, do they work. You can't find a bee. You cannot find an insect. You cannot watch a butterfly that's not busy seeking and finding the provision that God has for them. And it really seems that plants are more wise than people, because plants turn every leaf, every blade of grass toward the light, and they drive the roots down to get the water. And Christians should be getting rooted and grounded in love and grounded and rooted in the Word of God, which is the water of life, and turning toward the light for illumination and guidance. That's what we try to give you in the Awaken Now Conference, some insight in how to find direction for your life. In a few moments, we'll give you an opportunity to get the DVDs, the CDs, the transcripts. And I'm telling you, you're going to be blessed in the presence of the Lord. Right now, Betty, I want our viewers to look in and see reality and see situations where your love and your action is the only help and only hope people have. And there's no doubt in my mind you're going to be moved by compassion and love to take appropriate action.
She moved so slowly. No, she hardly moved at all. And no tears fell, because that well had run dry. While no picture of health, Rowan has been drained of life. The kind of life found in your role as a mother. Death came. It took from Rowan, but then it took again, and again, and again. In this heat, the average person can survive only a few days without water. Though this water might extend a life, it eventually takes it, especially children, because their immune systems are too weak for that fight. Trauma has taken its toll. But because the water which took her children is still their only source, Rowan knows that unless something is done to provide clean water, at any moment, she could lose all that remains.
Well, you know, when I see the heartache and the pain, sometimes, Betty, I feel like, you know, we don't have the ability to put in words what needs to be said in behalf of those who suffer and who die. And we have been, you know, appealing the needs of people for years, and we've watched love meet the need. But how do we ever really feel like we're getting across effectively enough when the need's so great?
Well, James, we just know that we have loving supporters that do reach out and join with us and help us. And if you haven't been before, I hope you will start now, because we need your help. Anytime that there's a need that we can present that we know will bring hope and love and a cure to disease such as this, a lack of clean water, it's a simple solution. They need the water well so that these precious children that these mothers love so much and would die for themselves, they need our help. These mothers need our help, James. They don't have anything else they can do. They've done all they know they can do to help their children.
I think as a grandparent and as a parent, I think I do feel that I can come to you representing the heartache of parents, of grandparents when they lose a loved one. And we're asking you to provide the only answer. And for them, in their particular circumstances, the answer is a perfect one. It's a certain one. It's clean water. Every one of the 500 areas that we have surveyed with our missionaries, we know definitely there is water. We know that in most areas, it's relatively shallow. That would be below 200 or 250 feet. Sometimes 150 to 175. Sometimes we know there's a pretty good level of water because boreholes confirm it, where they dug down just a narrow little borehole and found water, but it gets filthy and contaminated because there's no way to protect it. So we give them a cased and cased with concrete and steel structure that protects the water shaft down to the water. And we give them a mechanical pump. If you wonder why we don't give them electric pumps in so many areas, even where there is electricity, which many of the areas where we work there is not, but even where there is electricity in these third world countries, it's intermittent. It'll be off for hours at a time, almost every 24-hour cycle, sometimes days. So we give them something that children can activate and they can get the water. Our goal, 500 wells. Could you drill one of them? Could you give 1,200 or 2,400? And pray that another person or three people join you. $48 will give 10 people water for the rest of their life. 144 will give 30 water the rest of their life. Would you dial the number or go online and make the largest gift you can? We want to send you the Awaken Now Conference tapes to be a blessing to you and to inspire you. And yes, to awaken us all to the purpose and will of God for us today. Thank you so much for making that call and making that gift.
Every day, millions of children are forced to make a dreadful choice. Drink filthy, polluted water filled with deadly disease, or die from thirst. No child should ever be faced with this decision. The good news is there is a solution. Mission Water for Life is one of the most exciting and viable demonstrations of God's love in the world today. Suffering can end because clean water changes everything. With your gift today, we can establish and drill 500 new water wells for remote villages in over 12 different nations. Your gift of $24 will help provide clean water for 5 people. A gift of $48 will help provide for 10 people. $72 will impact 15 people. And $144 will help provide fresh, clean, disease-free water for 30 people for a lifetime. With your gift, be sure to request the Awaken Now audio series, a once-in-a-lifetime gathering of 23 anointed speakers proclaiming a powerful message for every believer in God's kingdom. With your gift of $100 or more, you may request Awaken Now on both audio and video, along with the companion book containing the speaker's sermons and encouraging messages. Finally, please prayerfully consider a gift of $1,200 to help provide water for 250 people, or a gift of $4,800 to help sponsor a complete well. And be sure to request our new commemorative sculptured glass statue, The Blessing. Please call, write, or make your secure gift online today.
Remember, we're sending the glass sculpture to those of you who drill a well or give at least $1,200 toward it, and the Awaken Now CDs for any gift, and the DVDs, CDs, and the transcript of the Awaken Now Conference. If you make a gift of over $100, I'm praying that everyone watching, Betty, will do something. Yes. And I can promise you these incredible teachings, the great messages, are going to bless you and inspire you beyond measure. Thank you so much for helping us share life. Tell your friends to watch life today. I think they'll be glad you ask them to. God bless you.
Tomorrow on Life Today, James and Betty celebrate 50 years of ministry and marriage at the Awaken Now Conference with guest speaker Andy Andrews. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.